When you picture the 1960s, your soundtrack might well be the album Surrealistic Pillow by the Jefferson Airplane. The band's huge following has dwindled over time. Rock historian Ed Ward has been listening to the re-release of their first four albums, and he says their music deserves a bigger audience.
An LSD trip follows a pattern where things start out normal, get increasingly disorienting, and then, if all goes well, there's a plateau which can be exciting and horrifying, often at the same time. Eventually, the drug wears off, and the tripper reintegrates with the real world. This pattern occurred to me recently as I was listening to the first four albums by the Jefferson Airplane, that most psychedelic of American bands. The normal part started when a singer named Marty Balin and a guitarist named Paul Kantner added a female singer, Signe Tolley Anderson, and a hot local blues picker, Jorma Kaukonen, to their act. All of a sudden, they were a folk rock band, so they got a rhythm section and called themselves after a jokey name Kaukonen sometimes used, Blind Lemon Jefferson Airplane. In the summer of 1965, they became the house band at The Matrix, a club Balin part owned, and by the fall they had a new bassist, Jack Cassidy, and a new drummer, Skip Spence, and a new record contract with RCA.
One time run around, don't look back, turn from me and go your way. You left me here without anything to love, I tell you I've had enough of your hands running round my brain.
Their first album, Jefferson Airplane Takes Off, was bright and folk rocky. The blend of Marty, Signe, and Paul's voices was radio friendly. The band had several regional hits, but never charted nationally.
It's no secret how strong my love is for you. It's no secret when I tell you what I'm gonna do, 'cause I love you, yes, I love you. It's no secret. Everybody knows how I feel. It's no secret when I say my love is real, 'cause I love you, yes, I love you.
The second stage of the Airplane's trip began with Skip Spence leaving for the newly founded Moby Grape, Signe leaving to raise a family, and drummer Spencer Dryden arriving, along with Grace Slick, the singer from a San Francisco band, The Great Society. RCA wanted an album as soon as possible, so they all went to Los Angeles in late October 1966, where, as the media began to notice the San Francisco scene, they recorded Surrealistic Pillow, the album that would epitomize it. It was the album that would lead them to their plateau. There were two top 10 hits on it, both showcases that Grace had brought with her from The Great Society.
When the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you dies. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? Wouldn't you love somebody to love? You better find somebody to love.
Somebody to Love hit the charts just as the San Francisco hype was starting, and White Rabbit, an ambiguous song simultaneously praising and warning about the psychedelic experience, followed it and stayed on the radio throughout the Summer of Love. Ironically, though, the band spent most of that summer far from the Haight-Ashbury, sequestered in the Hollywood Hills, in a house once used by the Beatles, with 24-hour access to the recording studio, recording the follow-up. Like the LSD peak, this lasted a long time, 6 months, an eternity in pop music in those days. The result, however, was worth it. The third album was called After Bathing at Baxter's, and to my ears, it's the most accomplished work to come out of the first generation of San Francisco bands. It's a great album, but it's not without its faults, most notably a very short track with a bunch of people jabbering in an echo chamber called A Small Package of Value Will Come to You Shortly. The title is commonly assumed to refer to cocaine, which along with alcohol was becoming more and more a part of some of the band members' lives. As good as Baxter's was, there wasn't a hit on it. Now the band felt the pressure from RCA. Once again, they created in the studio, and guitarist Jorma Kaukonen and bassist Jack Cassidy were able to come up with plenty of musical ideas. Good thing, too, because the lyrics were beginning to get strident. Crown of Creation was musically tight, but it was also self-indulgent, and listening to it today, it's obvious that the band had broken into factions. Grace Slick and Paul Kantner were now a couple, and Grace was given to bizarre behavior like appearing on television in blackface. Kaukonen, Cassidy, and drummer Spencer Dryden were more interested in playing, and Marty Balin, who had started the band, must have wondered if his airplane had been hijacked. It had. Although the band became staples of the new FM radio world, rather than reintegrating, they disintegrated into solo projects, self-indulgence, and eventually into the Jefferson Starship, a tired parody of what had started out as a fine trip.
Ed Ward lives in Berlin.